If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're going to be talking about the two times this week that Teresa's husband, Louis, from The Real Housewives of New Jersey, has put his foot in his mouth this week. I'm also going to be talking about the latest on The Real Housewives of Dubai and the first hints that we've really gotten about what's gone down between Chanel Ayan and Lisa Milan to contribute to their fallout after being best friends for so many years. But first, like, I did want to talk about this drama that I cannot stop thinking about this week. It has nothing to do with Bravo. It's obviously celebrity related, but there's a lot of people online speculating about this new Blake Lively movie, It Ends With Us, which I actually saw an early screening of on Monday, thanks to my friends at Threads. They hosted a screening at the Roxy Cinema, at the Roxy Hotel in Tribeca, and a lot of the cast was there, including Blake herself, including Colleen Hoover, the author of the book that the movie is based on. But there's a lot of smoke around this idea that Blake and Justin Baldoni, who is her co-star in the movie, don't get along and they don't like each other. The rest of the cast doesn't like him. There's a lot of clues. I want to explain it before I get into the Bravo stuff today because the movie comes out on Friday, so the day that this episode's dropping. It's supposed to do really well. It's supposed to potentially dethrone Deadpool and Wolverine, which is Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman's movie. Obviously, Ryan is married to Blake. So there are a lot of different factors here to discuss. So I'm going to break it all down for you, especially because I've been posting a little bit about it this week and people are in the replies being like, wait, what's going on? A couple of outlets have covered it, but not really extensively because there's not really anything concrete. There's just a lot of different things that have added up to kind of contribute to the idea that like there's definitely something happening here. So anyway, most of the cast was at this screening of It Ends With Us, which was in New York on Monday night. Noticeably absent though was Justin Baldoni, who co-stars in the film. He directed the film and he produced it. And he's also just the reason that the movie even exists because he is the one that purchased the rights to the book back in 2019. He also personally approached Blake Lively to lead the film. He's been conspicuously absent, like, from a lot of the press, a lot of this movie's press cycle, which has been pretty exhaustive, honestly. Like, I mean, if you're not opening Instagram every day and seeing a new Blake Lively outfit, like, I don't know what bubble you are in, but you're not in the bubble that I'm in. Like, to me, like, this movie has been pretty inescapable as she has, but Justin kind of hasn't. I mean, he's been doing some press, but everything has been without the rest of the cast. He's done some one-off interviews on his own, but nothing with the other people, and a lot of them have been paired for other things. Most of the rest of the cast has unfollowed him on Instagram. Blake has been endlessly promoting this movie, but she has never included him in any of her posts. She doesn't tag him. She doesn't talk about him in any interviews. And normally it's like, I guess, like, you know, you don't have to talk about all the co-stars in a film when you're promoting it, but like, he is the person that she marries in the movie. He is the person that directed the film. He's a star in and of himself. So it's sort of like, it's just such an obvious omission. You know what I mean? It's a blatant omission from everything. They had a premiere in New York City on Tuesday night. So the night after I saw the screening, and there was a Q&A with the whole cast after, again, except for Justin, at this Tuesday night premiere, none of the rest of the cast took any photos with Justin. Nobody. He posed with his wife and he posed with some of his friends that were there, but that's it. The rest of the cast posed in a ton of photos together on the red carpet at the after party. He didn't pose in one photo with anybody else from the movie. And at the premiere on the red carpet on the press line, Jenny Slate, who was also in the movie, she was doing a interview with Deadline, and they asked what it was like to have Justin be a director, but also a scene partner. He plays her brother in the movie. And she completely sidestepped the question. She didn't mention him by name. She says, I mean, what an intense job, having to do so many things. I just found myself being like, I just really want to have one job at once. In fact, I've always felt that way. And then she kind of goes off on that tangent about that and never kind of loops it back to Justin. I mean, honestly, it was a masterful answer in terms of like trying to avoid talking about him, if that was the objective, and which in turn is avoiding talking about any potential drama, because I guess it's been out there that Blake and Justin did not get along or don't like each other, I guess. That's been sort of a rumor. But this week, it's kind of really hit fever pitch in terms of the speculation, because they've all been out promoting and they had the premiere, and it's just been very, very blatant. But also, it's not just something going on with his co-stars. Both of his podcast co-hosts, I guess he co-hosts a podcast called the Man Enough Podcast. I had never heard of it, but they were both at the premiere. He posed with one of them, the other guy, but the other one, a woman named Liz Plank, again, somebody I've never really heard of, never interacted with him at the premiere. She posted a bunch of stories, a bunch of photos on her story from the premiere. She tagged Blake Lively several times, calling her the ultimate crown straightener, like women supporting women. She did not acknowledge Justin Baldoni, who is, again, a co-star of the film, a director of the film, and her podcast co-host at all. She went to his movie and didn't celebrate him, didn't mention him. I mean, something happened. Again, he is the co-star, director, and producer of the movie. She co-hosts the podcast with her, and she went to his premiere and didn't acknowledge him, but acknowledged his co-star, who has also been ignoring him. Also, it should be mentioned that the podcast, the Man Enough Podcast, has not released a new episode in almost 2 months, since mid-June. And the podcast is produced by Justin's production company, Wayfarer Studios, LLC, which also produced It Ends With Us, which, like, if you think about it, like, that would obviously be a great cross-promotional synergy that could happen there. You know, run ads for the movie on the podcast. Talk about the movie on the podcast. Talk about the podcast while promoting the movie. I don't know. But, like, none of that's happened. Like, it just that podcast feed is completely stopped. The podcast co-host is not talking about him, but still going to the premiere and tagging his co-star, who is also ignoring him, and all the press around the movie. It's weird, right? So it's sort of like, what's going on, obviously? Like, what happened here? Some people are speculating, based on a recent reveal by Blake, that her husband, Ryan Reynolds, again, who has been doing a ton of promotion for the movie himself, too, apparently he rewrote the scene in the movie. It's the scene where her character meets Justin's character. It's a meet-cute scene on a rooftop. It's a pretty pivotal scene. It's an emotional scene. And him rewriting that scene, it raised a lot of eyebrows, especially in conjunction with the fact that Ryan has kind of openly been saying, like, he wants to make Deadpool and Wolverine and It Ends With Us another sort of Barbenheimer situation. Obviously, when Barbie and Oppenheimer last summer sort of dominated the box office, you know, drove record crowds, record numbers, a female skewing movie, a male skewing movie kind of dominating together. And Deadpool and Wolverine, obviously a more male-oriented film. It Ends With Us, a more female-oriented film. Deadpool and Wolverine has been doing amazing at the box office, and It Ends With Us is kind of projected to potentially knock Deadpool and Wolverine from the top spot. It's been out for several weeks now, but it seems like Ryan is doing all this extra press, kind of putting in a lot of extra effort to make sure that this movie does really well as well. I mean, him and Hugh Jackman were both at the premiere too, posing with Blake. And it's sort of like this, there is sort of a synergy happening between those two movies. Like, Blake is friends with Hugh Jackman, and it's also like the Taylor Swift connection, all these different things. But it raises eyebrows, because I think there's one of the big points of like what could have happened here. One of the big points of speculation is that Blake and Ryan sort of seized creative control over the film and its marketing. And Justin was sort of like pushed out from that. And I saw someone say, Kelly, aka at Laguna Biatch, a friend of mine online, she said that she heard that he freaked out about how much control Blake had while she was also a producer on the film, and that the cast also dislikes Justin. But again, that's all very alleged. That's not really based on anything substantial or concrete. And also, like, if he was pushed out of the creative control of the film and the marketing of it by Blake and Ryan, that doesn't really explain them unfollowing him and like going out of their way to erase his involvement in the movie while promoting it, right? I mean, I guess if his freak out was like that crazy or like overstepped or something, I don't know, that could explain it. But like, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely something there. And again, Hugh Jackman was at the premiere, so him being there is kind of a distraction because it brings in the Deadpool Wolverine kind of factor, and that's something they can talk about and be asked about while they're doing interviews on the red carpet at the premiere. And the other thing was that Blake re-wore this rainbow floral Versace dress that Britney Spears famously wore over 20 years ago. She wore that dress on the red carpet. And again, that's another sort of big, fun, distracting thing to be asked about on the red carpet, especially as the kind of fervor around the speculation that there was drama on set or drama between her and Justin, as that sort of picks up steam, you know, wearing the Britney dress, having Hugh Jackman there, having Ryan there, having the sort of Deadpool Wolverine tie-in, those are like fun distractions from having to talk about this drama or being asked about the drama. People were clearly like too scared to talk about it, or maybe they were told not to ask about it. That happens a lot on red carpets. Like before an interview, a publicist will get to the journalist first and be like, hey, you get X amount of time with Blake, but you can't ask about this. That happens all the time. It's happened to me. That's how it works. So who knows? But like those two things happening at the premiere, it's like that gives it more fun, tangential stories and headlines to make out of the premiere and out of that red carpet. And also, as all of this was heating up on Thursday, People Magazine, which is obviously very much known to kind of help certain celebrities with PR problems and run certain stories, and you know, it's all back-channeled. But there was a sudden exclusive story from People that was headlined, Justin Baldoni was, quote, mesmerized by Blake Lively, making It Ends With Us. Quote, I just had to get out of the way. Exclusive. The article goes on to say, Baldoni, the director and star of the book-to-screen adaptation, tells People that when Lively's name came up for the lead role of Lily, she just checked all the boxes. The way Colleen Hoover wrote the book, outside of the hair color, the actress could have been played by anybody, so long as she was a woman that was extremely charming, likable, and that everybody would root for. Not only did Lively, 36, fit the brief perfectly, says Baldoni, she excelled at being, quote, involved in every area of production from the moment she signed on. Quote, the only box she didn't check was that she didn't have red hair, which is an easy fix in the film business. She's a creative force. She's an executive producer on the film, and she's so brilliant. I believe that her performance is going to help so many women feel seen and showcase this unique experience in a way that I don't believe I've seen in another film. It was during Lively's chemistry reads with actors for other It Ends With Us roles that Baldoni knew they had nailed her casting. I had never heard her say any of the dialogue out loud. We've only had conversations. So the first time I had ever heard Blake play Lily, there was a moment where I completely forgot what we were doing. I was just so mesmerized by what she was doing and who Lily was going to be that I had to snap out of it. Baldoni knew, quote, in that moment that the movie was going to work. And I just had to get out of the way enough to make sure that it did. I mean, those are interesting quotes to put out conveniently as the speculation that there was drama is heating up, you know? I mean, you can read it two ways. You can read those quotes as completely sincere and genuine. Blake was perfect for the role. He genuinely appreciates the fact that she was involved in every aspect of it, whatever. But it also could be a little bit backhanded, right? Like when he says that she, you know, she was involved in all aspects of the production as the director, you could see how that could like have like a subtext to it, right? Or him saying, I had to get out of the way enough to make sure that it worked. Again, that could be genuine, but that could also be like, I had to get out of the way. I was basically forced to get out of the way. I don't know. You can read into it. Maybe this is all like kind of conspiracy vibes, but there's something about this whole thing. I mean, who knows? But I just think there's something going on here. And the last idea I will mention that people have been speculating about is that it's all on purpose to lean into the fact that like his character is a villain in this film. But to me, that feels like a total stretch. Like, I don't know. I think that like they would have made it much more overt and obvious that they were sort of putting this on and less ripe for conspiracy and less sort of like, you know, connecting the dots of these subtle hints. Because Blake and Ryan especially, they're excellent marketers. They're amazing at marketing. I mean, Ryan has his own marketing company, but this isn't really their style. I mean, Ryan did this whole sort of like fake Junket interview with Brandon, who was the other co-lead on the film. And that was much more like his style, his lane. It was like much more obvious and tongue-in-cheek and self-deprecating humor. That's his speed. This sort of like connecting the dots conspiracy of celebrity drama. That's not really his vibe, I don't think. And as I said, I did see the movie. First of all, I had no idea what it was about. I did not read the book. I don't think I'd ever watched a trailer for the film. I got invited and I was like, I love going to the movies. You know, it's Blake Lively. It has a good cast. The cast will be there. So yeah, I decided to go. But I didn't know anything about the book. I'd seen some of the promotional parts of it. And again, like, you know, as I've sort of gone back and looked, Justin, in the few interviews that he's done, a lot of his quotes are about the themes of the film and the subject matter, which is, it's about abusive relationships. It's about a domestic abuse. A lot of Blake's press for it has been much more lighthearted. You know, she's wearing her, she plays a florist in the film named Lily Blossom Bloom. LOL. Her press has been a lot about like her outfits. You know, she self-styles and every outfit she's worn in the month leading up to the film has had some sort of floral element to it. Or she's asked about Taylor Swift or Ryan Reynolds. Like hers is much more like light and sort of, you know, airy celebrity coverage, while his is more like about like the movie and the serious themes of it. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out because I think that's also kind of like an interesting difference happening here. But to me, like the movie was entertaining. It wrote me in, but there are definitely some like, again, I did not know what this was about, but there were some really like ridiculous elements of this movie, that some of the dialogue and some of the choices that were made. I was like kind of like chuckling to myself because I was like, wait, what? Like, is this supposed to be tongue in cheek and funny, or is this just sort of like overly cheesy? Again, there were some endearing, really great moments of this film. Like there was this really beautiful conversation between Blake and Jenny Slate's characters, which I will be thinking about for a long time. Like that's a really amazing scene. But like even down to like, I mean, Blake has red hair in this movie and her hair color seems to change like every scene. Like there's this one scene in particular where she's wearing this ridiculous wig and it's like bright orange, and the rest of the film, it's like a little more subtle. I don't know. I like some of the outfits are like very much like beyond. I don't know if it's like some of Colleen Hoover's story and some of the writing style, because I think that some of the dialogue is directly lifted from the book. I don't know if it's some of that sort of like, you know, it works in a book, but maybe it's more clunky on screen. I don't know. But I found that like, I did find the abuse element of the movie was handled pretty well. And there's sort of like a murky nature to how it's presented to the audience. And at least at first. And like, I think that it makes the handling of the abuse a little bit less black and white. It like lends like a different perspective on it, which I think that like it felt a little bit more realistic and true to life than like the more sensationalized portrayals of abuse that we've seen on screen in the past. So that they actually handled that pretty well, I think. Yeah, I don't know. The movie, I walked out and I wasn't sure how to feel about it, but I've since sort of reflected and like, I think that it wasn't a fantastic movie. It's entertaining. I think it does the trick. And Blake, like, I don't think she's like the best actress of her generation, but she's very watchable. She's a total star. And even at this post-screening Q&A that I went to, like she was, you know, she had the room in the palm of her hand. You know, she's sillier than you realize, I think. And she clearly had fun with the rest of the cast on this movie. But see, clearly something went on between her and Justin Baldoni. And I don't know what it is. I hope that we get more answers going forward. But I thought you would appreciate this rundown of this speculated about drama, because we haven't had this juicy of sort of on-set film feuds and drama since Don't Worry, Darling and the Olivia Wilde, Florence Pugh, Harry Styles stuff. So we were long overdue in this arena. So hopefully you enjoyed this. I know it's a little bit more off topic than our usual Bravo stuff, but speaking of Bravo, let's get into it. Okay, so I'm not going to rehash all of the drama that's gone on between Teresa, Louie, and Margaret Joseph from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I spoke a lot about that in my recap of the season 14 finale that came out on Tuesday. So you can go back and listen to that if you want more around that and more of my sort of thoughts on everything else we've seen from that. But after the episode, well, actually not even right after the episode aired on Sunday night and on Tuesday, so like almost 48 hours later, Louie posted an apology on his Instagram story. This is just the first time that he sort of put his foot in his mouth this week, but I'll get to that second time later. Just a reminder before I read you and discuss the apology. In the episode, before the cast convened at this Last Supper at Rails, we see all of them preparing to have this big conversation with their cast. And you know, Louie and Teresa had their scene. And at first, Teresa's sort of like, I'm not going in with a plan. I'm just going to like see what happens. I'm ready, but like, I'm not going to like prepare. And Louie, on the other hand, is like basically trying to hype her up and coach her and put stuff in her ear going into this confrontation. So he says to her about Margaret Josephs, tell her to stay away from our family. And you know what? I hope Margaret and her family suffer. You know, I hope her fucking son suffers the way that I suffered, the way that other people in our family have suffered. And then he also goes on to call her a vile human being and a real piece of garbage. And he mentions her son because she claims that Louie called her son at work, and her son famously has never been on the show. He doesn't want to be associated with the show. He's not part of the limelight. He's not a public figure, which, it should be pointed out, is different from her daughters. Her daughters are all over the show. Gia, who is in her 20s now, has confessionals on the show. She is at group events. She was at the meeting with Teresa and her lawyer. Like, she's more involved. So it's Margaret's children are very different from Teresa's children in terms of their relationship to the show and the fame and the public facing nature of it all. Another difference, obviously, is that some of Teresa's daughters are still not 18, so they're children. So it's complicated. And I think one thing that I should say up top is like, and I'll discuss even more after I read the apology, but like, one of the things about this that's, I think, echoes what I said on Tuesday, which is like, I think Louie has changed everything. I think when Louie entered this space and entered Teresa's life, things changed for good. Things changed in a different way, and they got more serious and severe and more like kind of dangerous feeling and flirting with the line of crossing the line. And one of those things has to do with the children, because Teresa has always said like children off limits. The whole cast has sort of agreed to that, I think. Like, Margaret's never really gone off their children, and like now Louie's calling Margaret's son, and then it brings, and Gia's been brought into it by the analogy that Jackie did years ago. So it's definitely like shifting. Anyway, back to this apology that we got from Louie after saying that he hopes that Margaret and her son and her family suffer. He said, the finale was very tough for me to watch, and I wanted to address it with you all. After watching the finale, I was disappointed in my actions in bringing up Margaret Joseph's son. The reason he was even brought up was because I have been dealing with being falsely accused of calling Margaret's son at his work, which is simply not true. For the last year, Margaret kept putting this narrative out there that I called her son at work, and I've had to deal with it knowing I'm being lied on. Still, I know better not to bring somebody's child up, and it is something I deeply regret. So I do want to apologize and acknowledge that I was wrong. There's been a lot of toxicity on the show that has affected everyone on the show. We have been dealing with a lot of frustrating things behind the scenes, and it's been very hard for our family and my children, who have been really impacted by all that's happened at the hands of certain people. Two wrongs don't make a right, and I deeply regret saying what I said. So my first instinct here is that he's trying to stay in the good graces of Bravo. Again, over a day passed between the airing of the episode and this apology happening. And obviously in that day, which was this past Monday, fans were up in arms over his comments about wanting Margaret to suffer, wanting her son to suffer, wanting her family to suffer. But I also think that like posting something like this, expressing regret, even if he doesn't fully mean it, which I don't really fully believe he does, it's showing Bravo that he is willing to like show some contrition and show some like remorse over his actions and his words. I've said that I think that if they do pick a side of this, they would keep Teresa just because of how impactful and like integral she's been to the show over the years. But he is the big caveat to that, I think. He's the person that could prevent that from happening, in my opinion. For me personally, I would prefer to see like the Melissa and Margaret contingent stay on, but I think they'll go with Teresa. But again, he is the liability to her and the network. He's the one that has moved the line. He has different limits than everybody else. I mean, it just feels like it's changed since she's entered the picture. And I think that if Teresa does not come back from the show, it's more because of him than because of her. That's really what I think. And I think that, you know, when he came in, that's when the Joe and Melissa stuff kind of got past the point of no return. And, you know, he's always said that he's sad that Joe's not in her life and all this stuff, but I don't really believe that. I think he's purposely driving a wedge between Teresa and a lot of the people in her life, and it's upsetting. You know, on Las Culturistas this week, Matt Rogers also pointed out that, like, if you were to take Teresa and Jennifer out of the equation, if you were to go in sort of the opposite way that I think they'll go, this is more the way that I want them to go, you're left with Margaret, Melissa, Dolores, Rachel, Danielle, and Jen Fessler. You're guessing also Jackie does not come back. Those are six women right there who can get along and mix it up. And you could also add one or two more to keep it fresh and to give it sort of more of a reboot vibe. But like, that is a much easier fix than keeping Teresa and Jennifer and probably Dolores and maybe Danielle. Danielle would be a question mark. There's many more spots to fill in if you're Bravo production, to cast, to fill out the cast. So I don't know. Either way, it's very difficult and it's tough to imagine. But I thought that Matt made a really good point on his podcast this week with Bone Yang. On another podcast, Bitch Cess, which is now behind a paywall, Andy Cohen went on that show this week. He reacted to Louis's comments in this apology. He said he would have gone, quote, absolutely mental if someone had made the comments that Louis made about his own children. He said, quote, let me tell you something. If someone that I didn't care for invoked either of my children's names, that is what it would take for me to be Danielle Cabral, meaning jumping across the table. Danielle Cabral's button is, don't talk about my husband's pecs. Mine would be if you mentioned my children in an unfavorable way. I mean, if Andy's even saying it, I'm sort of like, that is raising an eyebrow or two from me. I mean, that's really interesting that he's talking about it that way. And again, the co-hosts of Bitch Cess, Danielle and Casey, they pointed out that like the women and Teresa have always had this line with the kids. You don't go for the kids, regardless of what age they are. I personally separately think that like if your kids are of age, if they're in their 20s, they're not really kids anymore and they can be treated differently. But that's not really how the Jersey cast thinks. And like, this is a big change from that. But Louis clearly has no problem doing that. And again, like I said earlier, he has different limits. And I think that because of that, he's changing Teresa's limits and he's impacting how she thinks about this kind of stuff. And again, it's just disappointing. And then there's this whole other thing completely. I mean, I guess it's kind of related because it has to do with the children and Louis putting his foot in his mouth. But I guess a new episode of Teresa's podcast dropped this week on Thursday. And it featured a chat with Louis. He was the guest on the show. And I guess they were talking about sort of like the importance of living it up when you're young and embracing your good looks and all these things. And this is from the Page Six article about the podcast episode. During his chat with Teresa, Louis emphasized the importance of living one's youth to the fullest and admitted to telling her daughters, quote, try it all. You know, nothing bad or anything like that, but I'm saying like, go to the club and dance, wear a thong, wear a short skirt, show your legs off a little bit. Because they're, quote, the most proper girls he's ever met. The businessman wants them to, quote, take a risk. He goes on to say, we went to Greece last year. You know what I told your daughters? Wear a thong. Do it now. Do it now because I didn't do it when I was young. Do it now. Experience it now. He added that when the girls eventually, quote, came out in a thong, his response was, quote, you look fucking amazing. The article says, as for Teresa, she seemed on board with her husband's remarks, saying, yes, while nodding, sharing that she feels too she missed out on her more carefree years. I'm sorry, but this is absolutely bizarre. I'm sorry. Like, what? What? He's rightfully getting skewered online for these comments, but to borrow a word that's been used a lot this week, he's weird. He's a weird guy. It just makes me uncomfortable, honestly, and I don't need to say much more about these quotes, but it makes for two notable comments from Louis this week. Okay, so let's get into the Real Housewives of Dubai, which I know I sound like a broken record about, but it's having a fantastic second season. You can actually skip the first season. If you didn't watch the first season, if you can't get into it, skip the first season and start with season two. I promise it is much, much better. They figured some stuff out. They added a great new addition in Talene. Caroline Stanberry is in much better form in season two. And there's a lot more drama to be invested in. So we're currently seeing this great cast trip to Bali, which, you know, it's finally given us an idea, a first taste of what happened between Chanel Ayan and Lisa Milan, who have been best friends for a very long time, inseparable, talked every day on the phone. But we knew they had a falling out this season during filming. No, nobody had any idea what it was about. And we're finally getting a taste of that. So in the carryover from last episode's to be continued moment at the end, it basically came out that Sarah Al-Madani sent Lisa a voice note where she was talking about Talene and saying some unfavorable things about her. But in part of the voice note, Lisa wasn't sure if Sarah was still talking about Talene or if she had switched talking about Caroline Brooks and she was shit-talking her. And Sarah and Caroline Brooks have gotten closer this season, so she wanted to clarify. So Lisa sent the voice note to Chanel Ayan, her, you know, close confidant, her best friend, to ask her to interpret the voice note and like tell her who she thinks Sarah was talking about in this portion of the voice note. It's convoluted, I know, but it's also very layered. And I think it's very interesting because there's various layers of sort of like, quote, betrayal happening here. Chanel then played the voice note for Caroline Stanberry, who she used to be enemies with, but now she's getting closer to. And Caroline Stanberry does not like Lisa. So then Caroline Stanberry, to be messy, obviously, brought it up at this dinner with the whole cast, and the whole thing blew up in all their faces, right? So here we have Sarah Almadani potentially betraying Caroline Brooks because Lisa thought she could be talking shit about her. Turns out she was not. She was still talking about Talene. Then we have Lisa betraying Sarah's trust by sharing the voice note with Chanel. But Lisa apparently never intended the voice note to get out. She just was like, again, sending it to her close confidant just to clarify who she was talking about. Then we have Chanel betraying Lisa by playing it for Caroline Stanberry, somebody who Lisa does not get along with. And again, sharing something she asked her not to share with anybody. And then we have Caroline Stanberry betraying Chanel's trust because she brought it up with the group. So the whole thing is like very layered and very kind of like literal game of telephone. But there's a lot of different friendship dynamics at play that I think is really fascinating. After it came out at this dinner that Chanel had played the voice note for Caroline, Lisa said that she could not trust Chanel Ayan anymore. Chanel was hurt by that, so she left dinner. Lisa then goes to check on her in her hotel room. And then the cameras went down, which I don't really know why. Like, I don't know why they didn't at least like follow her to the room and get, you know, the door slammed in their face, because Lisa is still mic'd. You'd think she's still mic'd because then we get a 20 minutes later Chiron and Lisa's leaving Chanel's room. She's in tears. She's so shook. She's still mic'd. So it's sort of like, couldn't have we gotten like an unintentional hot mic moment? Because then, you know, she's so upset because apparently Chanel Ayan had like yelled at her and chewed her out for the whole moment. So like something really intense happened in that room. It was alluded to many times, but we didn't get to hear or see it, which I think is kind of unfortunate. So then when she couldn't reach her own husband, Lisa called Ayan's husband and he had no idea what was going on because Chanel had not contacted him yet. But Lisa told Chanel's husband that Chanel had gone off on her by saying that she, you know, because she said she could never trust her again because she shared the voice note. It was kind of a weird decision to call the husband, I think, but it also kind of shows how close they are as like friends and couples, I guess. But again, I don't know why she wasn't mic'd for this conversation with Chanel. Like, if it was so intense, we should have been able to hear it. But then also in a confessional, Chanel claims that she had told Lisa that she had shared the voice note with Caroline Stanberry ahead of this big group dinner. So she says that Lisa is aware that she had betrayed her trust and shared it. So because she said that Lisa was aware already, her reaction in front of the whole group at this dinner was kind of faking outrage, was kind of like over the top for no reason and throwing her under the bus. So there's kind of like a war of words happening here. So then Lisa's saying that the way that Chanel Ayan yelled at her in this hotel room was like unlike anything she'd ever heard from her. It was really harsh. So then Ayan's really upset. She skips this really fun girls night out, which is great to watch. It was honestly so fun. And then the next morning, she and Lisa start crying at this breakfast as they kind of are all kind of slow to show up to this breakfast. And they leave the table and they work it out while they're sitting on the floor. And they're like, you know, we don't talk to one another like this. And to me, what they were basically saying is like, we should not let this show get between us. We are genuinely, amazingly close and good friends. We cannot let this happen to us. So they hashed it out. It was seemingly all good between them. And then that left viewers confused because it was sort of like, okay, but if this was the drama and they smoothed it over, how do they still have this falling out? So then I did some digging and Chanel Ayan responded to somebody on Twitter saying that. And she was like, actually, this is not what the falling out is over. But I do think that this moment happening, this first point of drama we've ever seen between them happening on the show, I think this formed the crack in their friendship. You know, they repaired it, but I think it was more a repair with a band-aid versus like a true repairing of it. And whatever else happens later in the season, it is exacerbated by the fact that this already happened between them, showing they can have problems with one another. You know what I mean? So as for what happens later in the season, we don't have very many clues as to like what else goes on. But I remembered in my interview with Chanel at the top of the season, I remember that she started talking about this finale and being really hurt from something that happened in the finale. So I think that we're not going to see more drama between Chanel and Lisa until the finale. So I went back and listened to my interview with her, and she implied that something happened. So this is what Chanel told me earlier in the season on Gabbing with Gib. What happened at that finale is one of the most heartbroken feelings I've ever had in my life. I'm 42 years old, and when I say that, I really, really meant that. My son was there, so it was even 10 times worse than it was supposed to be. I was caught off guard. I wasn't expecting that. I was talking to her on the phone all day till the moment she walked in. It was a finale where we were supposed to be meeting and laughing and having fun with one another and being like, if I hurt you, let's move on. A fun environment. My son was going through a very hard time in school and being bullied. Lisa knew about it. So I asked the group in messages, hey, I'm throwing this finale party. Let me know if any of you is okay with him coming. Brooks was like, don't trust these girls. Call them individually to make sure it's okay. So then Chanel says she called everybody. And then she goes on to say, so what happened, if you see me crying in pain, I was very heartbroken in that pain. You could see that I am dead inside. I mean, it's kind of like cryptic, and I'm not really sure exactly what she's talking about, to be honest, but it sounds like she and Lisa were good. They were whatever. And something happens involving her son being at this party that she threw for the finale. I don't know. It sounds like, because also the other women have been saying, I'm shocked by what Lisa did at Chanel. She hurt her, you know, yada, yada, yada. So it sounds like Lisa does something at this finale that really betrays Chanel, or at least in the eyes of the group. So we have no idea what it is, truly. But, you know, they've both been pretty open in interviews and Watch What Happens Live appearances that it's very much possible for them to be able to reconcile with one another at the reunion. Andy is also actively encouraging it on Watch What Happens Live to both of them, because he knows, like, they need to, this can't be something that drags on and kind of bogs down the show going forward. They have to have this unexpected feud and make up and be friends again going forward. Maybe it's not the same as it was, but it can't continue on. It can't drag on. Think about Lindsay and Danielle in Summer House. The season where they had their falling out was not a fun season to watch. It was too dark. This season of Dubai has been fun because it hasn't been all about a big falling out. It happens at the end of the season, apparently. But we needed them to make up to make this last season of Summer House good again. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have this darkness kind of looming over the show. I really hope that Lisa and Chanel Ayan make up at this reunion, which was filmed yesterday on Thursday in New York City. You know, to me, there's hope for that because, one, they both express that, but also, two, you can say a lot about the Real Housewives of Dubai, but if there's one thing they do know how to do, it's how to be a real housewife. You know, like, they've studied the handbook, they know what it takes, they know what they need to do. And part of that is moving on and healing and getting over things and conflict resolution. And so this is their moment. I will be impressed if they reconcile. We don't know what happens, but I will be impressed if they come back from this, because they really need to. Viewers would much rather see Lisa and Chanel Ayan be friends than enemies. I know that for certain. So here's hoping that yesterday at the reunion, when they filmed it, that they reconciled, they made up. That bodes better for a potential season three of The Real Housewives of Dubai, which, I mean, the ratings have not been good, so that's not a given that they'll get a third season. I really hope they do. I mean, Bravo took a huge bet on this show, their first international edition, the first official international edition of The Real Housewives. Here's hoping that Lisa Milan and Chanel Ayan made up at this reunion taping. We'll see. That is all for today. Thank you so much for tuning in to Gabbing with Gib. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now. Reminder that we have full episodes with guests on our YouTube channel. Follow us on TikTok and Instagram. And we'll be doing a listener mailbag episode next week. So go submit your questions on our Instagram, either by sending us a message or responding to one of our prompts on our stories in the coming days. Thanks again and have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.